Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
WABC New York and 107.1 WLIR Hampton Bays. It's the 77 WABC News Hour. Talking the news with Noam Layden. All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, Traffic, Justin Ellick, Sports. And now, Talking the News with Noam on 77 WABC.
Yes, that's me, 5 o'clock. Good morning. It is Monday, April 29th. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Sunshine this morning, clouds this afternoon. Could see a thunderstorm this afternoon. The high 70. Tonight and overnight, partly cloudy, low 54. And then Tuesday, morning clouds, sunshine in the afternoon, high 66. If you're walking out the door with us right now, it is 62, partly cloudy in Freeport out on Long Island, 61, partly cloudy in Colts Neck over in New Jersey. And it's 62 and kind of misty here in Midtown. A whole lot to get to as we work our way up to the 6 o'clock hour. Sid and friends in the morning yesterday was just a beauty of a day. You feel like, oh, finally spring is here. So I really had to debate myself whether to stay inside and watch the Knicks, who I love and followed since I was a little kid. And so my brother, who lives not too far away from me, said, hey, come on down. Let's just watch this game. There's going to be lots of sunny days to come. And I'm glad they did. Boy, Jalen Brunson had 47 points. Now, if you're not a big basketball fan or a sports fan at all, for that matter, the interesting part of this game was it was the Knicks playing the 76ers in Philadelphia. But if you watch the game, you would have thought it was a home game for the Knicks. It was amazing how many Knicks fans had gotten their way into the Wells Fargo Arena in Philadelphia. It's embarrassingly so. Now, sometimes late in the season, if a team is playing terrible, let's say like the Giants, who were pretty much awful last season, if they're playing another team and it's the end of the season and that team is pretty good, you'll see a lot of those other fans in there because the Giants fans have given up on their team for the season and they sell their tickets on the secondary market to make some money. But here we are in the heat of a playoff series, and the 76ers, for whatever reason, their fans are willing to sell out to Knicks fans. I can't remember seeing it in a way like I did yesterday in a long time. Even after the game, you saw the Knicks fans outside the Wells Fargo Arena just going crazy, embarrassing the hometown, so much so that the 76ers players had to comment on it after the game, saying, yeah, they heard the Knicks fans out screaming their 76ers fan. But anyway, Jalen Brunson was big. 47 points, that sets a record for the most points by a Knick in a playoff game.
Job done. You know what your job is, do your job, execute. And then, you know, there was disappointment in the way we finished the last game. But what we were in control of is how we got ready for this game.
Yeah, that's actually the Knicks coach. But here's Jalen Brunson.
But we got to figure out how can we be better. And I'm going to continue to say it. We got to be better if we want to close out and move on to the next round, because this team's not going to quit fighting.
Yeah, so Knicks go up 3-1. We'll let our good friend Justin Ellick do the entire game. But anyway, it was fascinating to watch how those Knicks fans took over the Wells Fargo Arena in a way that I have not seen happen in sports really in a long time. The NYPD investigating what are four violent muggings in Central Park. The suspects remain at large. Police say they happened about 12 hours apart, shocking tourists and neighbors alike on the Upper West Side.
Yeah, that's strange because everywhere we go, there's loads of police.
I mean, it's horrible, but this is the state of New York at this point, that we can't just walk around.
Yeah. Cops say around 6 a.m., a 42-year-old man taking photos just off Fifth Avenue when three men in masks approached him. They put a gun to his head, punched him in the face before taking off on mopeds with two phones and a wallet. Then a 28-year-old woman walking near 97th and West Drive. This was about 8 p.m. Saturday. They stole her wallet, her phone. There was four separate, pretty violent muggings between Friday and Sunday. Now, there was one person who actually fought back, which is not something I suggest you should do. And he would even suggest that it was probably not the smartest thing to do. But 25-year-old Ashakur Chowdhury, he was walking near the Great Lawn. This was at sunset on Saturday when he says two men walked up to him. They pulled out a gun. First, actually, they initially said, hey, can we have your wallet and your phone? He said no. So they pulled out a gun, and he was able to talk them out of mugging him, which is sort of interesting, by daring them to shoot him, which is something you not a million years you should do.
Told him, you know, like, hey, you're not going to, I just told him, you're not going to shoot that gun. You don't have the balls to shoot the gun. You don't have the balls to shoot me. I looked at him in his eyes. It was just, it was all panic and fear. Listen, like, if you need help, there's always, you know, someone out there to help you.
Yes, so Chowdhury, who is actually a teacher who works with special needs kids, said he could see behind the masks that they were wearing that they were kids as well. But he's the first one to tell you that it was not a smart move on his part to challenge them to shoot him in the return for his phone and for his wallet. But I will say this, they left him alone after he said, leave me alone.
A lot of people have been calling it brave, but I personally see it as reckless and irresponsible. I should have just given him my phone.
Yeah, I mean, the phone and the wallet are not worth your life. No two ways about it. In his case, a biker actually rolled up and saw what was going on, and that also scared off the two kids. But Chowdhury saying, don't follow my example. If someone tries to mug you, hand over everything that they want.
I hope that anyone I inspire, I only inspire the good parts about me, the parts that are, like, caring and kind, not the parts that are a brave idiot.
Yeah, okay, I like the fact that he calls himself a brave idiot. So here we have now, he's the fifth, five muggings between Friday and Sunday, all in Central Park. NYPD has not caught up with any of these folks, some of them on mopeds. And in the case of this guy who was able to convince these muggers to leave him alone, it seems like they were teenagers. WABC News Time 508. Well, we had just sort of a beautiful Sunday and a pretty nice weekend for that matter. That was not the case throughout the Midwest. I was scrolling through the TikTok over the weekend, watching these funnel clouds, tornadoes hitting a bunch of towns. Unfortunately, four people killed. Some of this in Oklahoma, the small town of Sulphur hit hard. This woman describing what it was like when the tornado touched down over the weekend.
It's always been, no, it won't hit because it's in the valley, but it hit.
Sulphur was hit by an EF3. Another EF hit the town of Marietta, where there's also widespread damage this morning.
It's the trees through the windows. We had just done new construction. It's all gone. So, everything.
I love these tornado chasers who film all of this because you get to really see the destruction. Some of these funnel clouds dipping down, and you just see everything being scooped up down below.
We all stick together. We all stick together, no matter what.
Oklahoma Emergency Management reports a man and child died in the town of Holdenville, where homes were destroyed by the tornado overnight. Damage reported in a number of communities, including the small town of Morris, where there was a ton of damage.
There was a tornado spotted on the ground. We notified the National Weather Service, and after everything cleared, we started responding to the area to do cleanup and search and rescue operations.
Yesterday, the Oklahoma governor, Kevin Stitt, he was getting a firsthand look at all the damage. Helicopter on the road as well.
Definitely the most damage since I've been governor that I've seen. I've seen a lot of damage. I've been around the state for, it's my sixth year. But what I saw downtown Sulphur, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, so 170 storms reported in the state over the weekend. That seems just unbelievable. Omaha, Nebraska also getting hit by these tornadoes as well. The small town of Minden, Iowa.
You could hear the debris hitting our kitchen floor. We were under our kitchen, and the pressure changed. Your ears popped, and just an enormous amount of debris just was falling on the floor above us.
Yeah, in Nebraska, you had lawmakers holding a press conference yesterday talking about what took place, how they'll help out.
I just came from a couple of the locations of Ground Zero, and let me tell you, it's extraordinarily sobering. It is an extraordinary miracle that we've had this kind of a cell come through, and no casualties, no loss of life.
One of the towns actually hit was Omaha. The mayor there says police fire moved quickly to help people out, and doesn't seem like there was any serious injuries or deaths.
And set up command centers out west even before I think the storm had passed. Omaha Fire Department quickly went into search and rescue, went through every single property that was affected.
Yeah, so that was there in the Midwest over the weekend. By the way, there was an earthquake here over the weekend. Did you feel it on Saturday in New Jersey? The same spot where the last earthquake emanated from in New Jersey. This is where the second was, too, but they say it wasn't an aftershock. It was a whole new earthquake, 2.9. I didn't feel it where I was, but some people did. No word of any damage in New Jersey from it. Seismologists are actually already in New Jersey looking at that last earthquake. That was a 4.8. Now they have this new one to look at that over the weekend. That was a 2.9. We were out in the Midwest. Did you see this upcoming book by South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, where she reportedly writes about, well, she doesn't reportedly, she does write about a time when she had to shoot and kill, she says, her untrainable and less than worthless 14-month-old puppy. Why you would write about this in a book when you want to be the vice president? I think she clearly wants to be Donald Trump's vice president. I don't think it'll happen after this book comes out. The Guardian got, the newspaper, obtained a copy of Noem's soon-to-be-published book that goes, it's called No Going Back, The Truth on What's Wrong with Politics and How We Move America Forward. And in this book, she tries to illustrate, she says, how she's willing to do anything necessary, even if it's difficult, messy, and ugly. And she goes on to talk about how she killed this 14-month-old dog because, well, she didn't like it. That's really what essentially came down and was no help to her on the farm. And you can imagine the blowback. I mean, this might be a one-time moment in recent American history where you probably have both Democrats and Republicans on the same side against her. And people love their dogs, and they don't want to hear about anybody killing a 14-month-old dog and calling it worthless. I don't know if she was trying to sink her chances of being on that short list of vice presidential candidates for Donald Trump. But no doubt this moment has done that. While we're talking the campaign trail, voters aren't not concerned with former President Trump's criminal cases. This according to Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina. He took to the news shows over the weekend. He says Americans can see that these cases against the former president are politically motivated.
I think the Jack Smith trial is selective prosecution. They didn't go after Clinton. They didn't go after Biden on classified information breaches.
Republican senator claims Americans aren't concerned about Trump's prosecution, citing a new CNN poll that shows Trump leading over President Biden in a general election matchup.
Absolutely. I think what's going on with Donald Trump is weaponization of the law. He's being prosecuted in Manhattan, one of the deepest blue state cities in the country. I think most people have written this off. They're going to focus on their problems, not a bunch of cases brought by liberals against Trump.
Former President Trump will be back in that lower Manhattan courtroom this morning at 9:30 for that hush money trial. Meanwhile, Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell says abortion issue will be sorted out at the state level. He doesn't think it'll hurt Republicans in the fall.
I don't think we'll get 60 votes in the Senate for any kind of national legislation. I think it's a practical matter. It's going to be sorted out at the state level.
Yeah, he's talking about this idea to push through a national abortion ban. He refused to say if he would personally vote for a 15-week national abortion ban as proposed by South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham. He says it doesn't stand a shot in the Senate, so there's no use talking about it.
I don't think any federal legislation is likely to get 60 votes in the Senate on any direction. My members are smart enough to figure out how they want to deal with this very divisive issue based upon the people who actually send them here.
In a moment, we'll stay on the campaign trail and we'll tell you how the Green Party candidate for the White House ended up in handcuffs over the weekend. We'll get to that in a moment. But first, 5:15, let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk. Happy Monday. Good morning, Justin Ellis.
Happy Monday. Good morning to you, Noah Mulladen. Start here on the ice in the NHL. Artemi Panarin scored the go-ahead goal on the power play early in the third period. Igor Shesterkin made 23 saves, and the Rangers finished off a sweep of the Washington Capitals with a 4-2 victory in Game 4 to advance to the second round. Here's what the action sounded like, courtesy of the great Sam Rosen and MSG.
Fox, Zibanejad, Panarin, score! Artemi Panarin! It's a power play goal! Rangers lead 3-2, and this one is over! The Rangers sweep it! The New York Rangers sweep the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Igor Shesterkin with a brilliant series. The Rangers' first sweep of a best-of-seven series since the 2007 sweep of the Atlanta Thrashers.
The Atlanta Thrashers, remember that?
Yeah.
Trade deadline pickup Jack Roslovich sealed it with an empty netter with 51 seconds left, and the Rangers will next face either the Carolina Hurricanes or crosstown rival New York Islanders, with a spot in the Eastern Conference final at stake. Carolina leads that series 3-1, following a 3-2 double overtime victory out of the Isles in Saturday's Game 4. Round 2 action for the Rangers cannot start until Thursday at the very earliest, and likely will begin after that. On the hardwood in Philly, Jalen Brunson scored a career playoff high, 47 points, added 10 assists, and the Knicks beat the 76ers 97-92 on Sunday to take a 3-1 lead in their first-round playoff series. Brunson's 47 is the highest ever by a New York Knicks player in the postseason, surpassing the 46 points scored by Bernard King in 1984. OG Anunoby added 16 points and 14 rebounds and took on some of the defensive assignment against Joel Embiid in the fourth quarter. Embiid scored 50 points, his postseason best, to lead the 76ers to a victory in Game 3. And he had them off to a great start in Game 4, but Brunson soon became the dominant player on the floor. First-time All-Star, finishing 18-34 from the field. The Knicks moved within a victory of getting to the Eastern Conference semifinals for the second straight year, and they'll have a chance to do just that with a victory at home in tomorrow night's Game 5. To the diamond in Milwaukee, Aaron Judge, his first-inning homer, got the Yankees' offense off and running wild once again, with the Yanks defeating the Brewers 15-5. They scored 30 runs over the last two games. Anthony Rizzo went 4-for-4 and hit his 300th career homer. Anthony Volpe added a three-run shot on his 23rd birthday. Judge went 3-for-4 with three RBI, including the 441-foot solo shot. New York also beat Milwaukee 15-3 on Saturday, marking the first time since 2007 that the Yanks scored at least 15 runs in back-to-back games. They grabbed a one-game lead in the AL East over the Orioles, who lost 76 to Oakland. The Yanks begin a four-game series at Baltimore tonight. First pitch there, 6:35. Clark Schmidt on the hill. In Mets land, Mark Vientos hit a two-run homer in the 11th inning on his second day in the majors this season to give New York a 4-2 comeback victory over the St. Louis Cardinals that prevented a three-game sweep. Mets were 0-for-15 with runners in scoring position down to their last strike when Harrison Bader singled home automatic runner DJ Stewart from third base with the tying run, and Vientos thereafter singled as a pinch hitter in the ninth. He drove that 1-2 pitch just beyond the glove of leaping Michael Ciani in the center field fence. Up next for the Mets tonight, opener four game set at home against the Chicago Cubs. First pitch scheduled for 7:10. Luis Severino gets a start there. That's your sports gnome. I'm Justin Ellick, 77 WABC.
WABC News Time 5:21. Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein among 200 plus protesters arrested over the weekend at pro-Palestinian demonstrations.
Stein, her campaign manager, and about 80 other protesters at Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri, were taken into police custody. Mass arrest also took place Saturday on the campuses of Arizona State, Indiana, and Northeastern University in Boston. In addition to the hundreds of arrests that have been made over the past 10 days, campus protests have affected events and classes at some schools. Southern Cal University is canceling its main graduation ceremony, while California State Polytechnic University of Humboldt has shut down its campus for the remainder of the semester. I'm Scott Carr.
Meanwhile, over at Columbia University, University, where this kind of all started. Today is the last day of classes. That tent city is still on the campus green. It seems like the school is just going to wait out these students to finish their exams and go back home. Students on the campus say they haven't spent much time there, the ones not involved in the protest, because it's kind of unpleasant, even though things have calmed down a bit.
The campus climate, I feel like it's definitely cooled down.
People have not, from my experience, have not wanted to go to campus. Even I only go to campus to go to the gym.
Student protesters say they have not been treated well by the heads of the university.
There's kind of this threatening force that is our administration currently. It is hopeful in a way because I am encouraged that the world is paying attention to what's happening in Palestine.
So now all eyes are on graduation. Will these pro-Palestinian protesters try to ruin graduation? Students who are graduating, some say they're okay with that. Others say they just want a normal graduation.
Knowing that there is such an issue that's happening across the country, not even Columbia anymore, I'm very much willing to sacrifice a graduation, one that I don't even want to attend, for a bigger purpose.
I don't want it to be canceled and to have a protest happening in the middle. I just want to get my degree, go home.
The gates remain closed to Columbia University's campus. It's normally an open campus you can walk through. And there's a lot of people who work cut through the campus to get to other places, nurses and doctors at a local hospital, and they say it's a total pain now that these gates are locked.
It's changed my commute. It makes it very difficult to get to the subway. It's very disruptive. There's many people here. It's very uncomfortable. There's a huge police presence here. It's not because things are going well.
University of Southern California canceling its maiden graduation ceremony due to those Palestinian protests. The mayor of Los Angeles, Karen Bass, says they made the move just to keep everybody safe.
They were expecting about 65,000 people on campus, and they just did not feel that it was going to be safe. And the job of the president, just like my job as mayor, my number one job is to make sure that Angelenos are safe. They didn't cancel everything. So the main graduation is canceled, but the individual schools have graduations as well. So there's a lot of ceremonies that will be taking place.
White House trying to figure this all out. They say the protests on university campuses against the Israel-Hamas war have to be peaceful. Here's National Security Council spokesman John Kirby.
We certainly respect the right of peaceful protest. People should have the ability to air their views and to share their perspectives publicly. But it has to be peaceful.
Kirby condemning the anti-Semitic language used by some of the protesters.
We'll leave it to local authorities to determine how these protests are managed, but we want them to be peaceful protests, and obviously we don't want to see anybody hurt in the process of peacefully protesting.
It is interesting. These protests have, you know, gone viral, essentially, on campuses across the country, including where my oldest goes to school at Temple University in Philadelphia, and he says that one of his friends who is identifiably Jewish, he wears a kippah. He said his friend was walking by one of these protests on the Temple University campus on Friday, and somebody spit on him. And he said he had not been confrontational. He was just walking by. So that's the kind of stuff that's going on. Meanwhile, the niece of an Israeli-American hostage being held by Hamas in Gaza believes a hostage deal can be reached. Hannah Siegel on Face the Nation yesterday says the Biden administration has shown it's committed to getting the hostages home.
I do think a deal can be reached. I mean, we know that. A deal was reached in November. Dozens of women and children were released, including my aunt, Aviva Siegel.
Hannah Siegel is the niece of Keith Siegel, who's been held hostage by the militant group for more than 6 months now. Hamas actually released a video of Israeli hostages over the weekend, including Keith. He was kidnapped along with his wife on October 7th.
There have been negotiations going on for months now. We're at 205 days. There have been deals on the table, and they've proven elusive. And I worry that that is because of Prime Minister Netanyahu.
Yeah, we keep hearing that there is a potential deal on the table again, but nothing more this morning. We'll check in with our buddies at JNS in Israel, in Jerusalem, and Alex Trayman, and see if he can give us an update. But there had been word that they were close to making some sort of ceasefire deal. But, of course, we've heard this many times over the past couple months. President Biden getting roasted at the White House Correspondents' Dinner on Saturday night.
It's after 10 p.m. Sleepy Joe is still awake.
While Donald Trump has spent the past week falling asleep in court every morning.
Yeah, apparently that's about as funny as it got. That's Colin Jost, who is normally funny on Saturday Night Live. President Biden kicked off the annual White House Correspondents' Dinner by taking jabs at Donald Trump.
The 2024 election is in full swing. And yes, age is an issue. I'm a grown man. Running against a six-year-old.
Yeah, again, that's about as funny as it got. Get ready for a busy week when it comes to the first quarter earnings, with more than 150 companies to report results this week. Chief among them are big names like Apple and Amazon. On top of that, the Fed kicks off a two-day meeting Tuesday with an announcement on interest rates coming the following day. At the closing bell on Friday, the Dow was up 153 points. S&P 500 rose 51. The Nasdaq jumped 316 points.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noah Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, Traffic, Justin Ellick, Sports. And now,
Talking the News with Noah
on 77 WABC.
Yes, that's me, 533. Good morning. It is Monday, April 29th. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Sunshine this morning, clouds this afternoon. Could see even a thunderstorm. High 79. Tonight and overnight, partly cloudy, low 54. And then Tuesday, morning clouds, sunshine in the afternoon, high 66. If you are walking out the door with us right now, so happy you are. 62, partly cloudy in Freeport out on Long Island. 61, partly cloudy in Colts Neck over in New Jersey. And it is 62 and kind of misty here in Midtown. We'll start this half hour right here in Midtown. New York City's congestion pricing plan has a start date. We were told about this over the weekend. The MTA wants to start beginning tolling you $15 to go below 60th Street in Manhattan on June 30th, so not so far away. The controversial plan charges a fee to enter Manhattan's Central Business District, which the MTA is now calling the congestion relief zone. Okay. It has about 100 MTA cameras are set up, ready to scan your license plates. They've been up actually for a while. There's one right here in our neighborhood up at Bloomingdale's, which is 59th and 3rd Avenue. The minute you come in, they'll take a picture of your license plate. You get charged $15. The MTA estimates that congestion pricing will result in about 100,000 fewer vehicles in the zone every single day. That's part of the reason they're championing this plan. The bigger reason is they will use the money they get from the congestion pricing to pay for all that's wrong with the MTA buses and trains.
Think about the benefits. Ambulances can get to hospitals faster. That's important for all of us. Cops and firefighters getting to where they need to be much faster.
That's the MTA chair, Jano Lieber. And as this starts to become more realistic and real, we are having discussions even here at WABC over the weekend about who might be exempt. And the truth is, almost really nobody's exempt. Even us, the press corps, we checked in. We were getting mixed messages over the weekend whether the press would be charged. We have press plates. And we got confirmation from the MTA that we will be charged like the rest of you to drive around the congestion zone, as they call it. The MTA says the pricing necessary to ease traffic, to support mass transit projects such as revamping the subway signal system, which is decades old. Drivers, of course, mixed on this plan.
Yeah, I can't take the bus because I got material with me, so I have to take a van.
You pay what you need to pay in order to get to where you got to get to. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, Manhattanites, those are the people who seem to like this idea, the ones who are not drivers, the idea of less cars.
I think there's far too many cars in New York City. You can't move around on a good day.
So there are lawsuits trying to stop this, but you're getting the idea that the lawsuits are likely not going to pan out in a way that helps people who do not want congestion pricing. One of the people who has led the charge is Congressman Josh Gottheimer from New Jersey. Of course, New Jersey drivers will get hit twice for the toll on the way in and then congestion pricing if they go into the zone. He has been fighting this for a while. There is a case in court in Newark where we should hear about this in the coming days. That might be be the last resort.
Maybe we should get an answer any day now. That could literally freeze it up and say you actually have to study the impact of the cancer-causing pollution that will come out because of more traffic. Yeah, I'm very optimistic about these lawsuits. You got to keep fighting this because families can't afford it.
Yeah, so that seems to be the last resort. Otherwise, June 30th will be the big day. Head on over if you want to know how this is going to affect you and whether you're exempt. You can go to WABCradio.com right now, and you can see it right there on our landing page. WABC News Time 5:39. Let's go out to Long Beach on Long Island. A sad day out there. A Queens man was fishing there yesterday. Somehow either purposely went into the water or fell into the water, was not able to get his way out. There were some people on the sand who raced in to try to pull him out of the water.
We heard yelling. We didn't know where it was from. And then we looked in and we saw a body in the water. One of our gentlemen took his clothes off to try to swim out there, but the water was too cold. So then they were trying to catch one, couldn't get it. And then he turned over and he was unresponsive.
Yeah, we're getting some identification this morning. His name is Daihu Liu. He's from Elmhurst, 67 years old. EMTs were at the scene within about 4 minutes. In fact, an animal control crew, those people know how to do CPR. They were the first ones on the scene. Then firefighters showed
up. Animal control was in the area, got down very quickly with the help of the Long Beach Fire Department, was able to pull the male out of the water. He was transported to a local area hospital where, unfortunately, he was pronounced dead.
Yeah, so the warning, of course, always goes out. If there's not lifeguards anywhere nearby, you shouldn't enter the water. Again, we don't know if this guy slipped or purposely was in the water.
It's a dangerous situation. The jetties are very slippery, very dangerous. The currents are very strong around the jetties, so we ask people to please be careful and be safe. Use your head. If there's no lifeguards, please don't go in the water.
Sadness, right? We're out here in a beautiful day, and then someone, yeah, you know, is drowning.
It is sad. The sad moment in Howard Beach out in Queens over the weekend. So this woman has this 6-year-old Pomeranian Husky mix who she loves. The dog's name is Arya. And all of a sudden, she's sitting in the house, and she hears the dog cry out. Someone, ended up being her next-door neighbor. Her next-door neighbor was firing off his gun. Why, we don't know yet. But one of those bullets penetrated the house where Marina lives with her dog, Arya, and it hit this 6-year-old Pomeranian mix in the chest.
It had to be her way or no way. She was the boss. I can't be in my parents' room. I can't sleep by myself. I'm just a mess. He saw a lot of blood, and he's like, we have to get her to the vet.
This poor little Pomeranian Husky mix was rushed to the hospital, needed surgery. They were able to get the bullet out, but the dog did not survive. The next-door neighbor, it was an 18-year-old who was firing off this gun. In fact, they found other bullet holes in another house on the other side of him. Now they're going to figure out what kind of charges to file against him.
She just looked tired. She saw my sister-in-law. She walked herself out of the cage, and she, like, wanted to come home to us. It's heartbreaking. She was my little girl.
Yeah, and you have some idiot firing off a gun in his own house, and it hits other houses, so he faces a bunch of other charges. Morena, who owns that little dog, has now filed a restraining order against her neighbor, who she said she had never met before. Now, of course, has no desire to ever meet again. In Newark, kind of this wild scene outside of a bar, the Cozy Corner Bar in Newark. His owner, his name is Paul Dietrich. He says, for some reason, his bar in the last decade or so has it attracted these people who steal cars and then they lose control of the car and they smack into his bar. Like, it's happened before. So now it happened over the weekend again. Thankfully, nobody was seriously hurt, but a whole bunch of people were hit by this guy who drove his car, a stolen car, into the Cozy Corner Bar over the weekend.
And knocked my bar mate through the wall, literally. And then I guess when all the debris and everything came with her, that's what hurt my customer that was sitting at the bar. The car caught on fire on the sidewalk. The car came down here, hit the bar, swung around to the left, smacked the wall. Girl that was standing outside smoking knocked her through the wall.
Now, amazingly, none of these people were seriously hurt. Police telling us this morning that this was a Toyota, had been carjacked about 2 blocks away. Once it smashed into the bar, the people inside the bar went to try to save this guy's life by putting out the fire that started in his car. And then he got out of the car and he raced away. So they haven't been able to find him. The injured are recovering. The building apparently is fixable. Here's the owner.
It seems like almost every accident that's occurred out here is always either by a stolen car or the accident was caused by a stolen car. So the insurance companies don't want to pay. I've been having to go do my homeowner's insurance. I like to say I'm held accountable, definitely.
Yeah, maybe it's time to move that bar to a different location. Meanwhile, they have not found that driver. And then over the weekend, there's tons of protesters up at Columbia University who are upset about the war in Gaza. And we've seen some protests down at NYU. But way more people showed up to this event over the weekend. That shows you we all have a good sense of humor. A guy advertised that he was going to try to down in an entire tub of cheese balls in Union Square Park. And tons of people, way more than showing up to these protests, came to watch him do this.
The event was advertised through vague flyers that had the date, time, location, and basic description of the event. A man in an orange mask was pictured under the header, "Watch me eat this entire jar of cheese balls." A huge crowd turned out on Saturday at 3 p.m., where the mystery man fulfilled his promise and downed an entire tub in front of a cheering crowd of spectators. I'm Liz Radabali for WABC News.
I mean, that's all it was. It was one of those, you know, Costco-sized tubs, so it was pretty impressive. 5:45, let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk with a man who I imagine can also down an entire tub of cheese balls. Here's Justin Ellis.
Yeah, I do it every Friday, Saturday night. I just don't do it in front of a big crowd. Square, you know
not
what I'm saying?
Once either.
I love that chant though. Eat those balls. That's yeah. You know, it reminds me of that guy in Philadelphia who every day for 40 days straight ate an entire rotisserie chicken, and on the 40th day, he went down to the sporting complex, and in the parking lot, there was this huge crowd surrounded him, and he finished off his last rotisserie chicken. And there must have been, you know, 1,000 people there. Swear
right.
to God.
And you're like, why?
But why?
It's something to do.
Exactly. On the ice in the NHL, no. Artemi Panarin scored the go-ahead goal on the power play early in the third. Igor Shesterkin made 23 saves, and the Rangers finished off a sweep of the Washington Capitals with a 4-2 victory. Game 4 to advance to the second round. Here's what the action sounded like, courtesy of Sam Rosen and MSG.
Fox, Zibanejad, Panarin, score! Round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Igor Shesterkin with a brilliant series. The Rangers' first sweep of a best of seven series since the 2007 sweep of the Atlanta Thrashers.
The Rangers will next face either the Carolina Hurricanes or crosstown rival New York Islanders with a spot in the Eastern Conference final at stake. Carolina leads that series 3-1, following a 3-2 double overtime victory out of the Isles in Saturday's Game 4. Round 2 action for the Rangers can't start until Thursday at the very earliest. It'll likely begin after that. On the hardwood in Philly, Jalen Brunson scored a career playoff high 47 points, added 10 assists, and the Knicks beat the 76ers 97-92 on Sunday to take a 3-1 lead in their first-round playoff series. Brunson's 47 is the highest ever by a New York Knicks player in the postseason, surpassing the 46 points scored by Bernard King in 1984. OG Anunoby added 16 points and 14 rebounds and took on some of the defensive assignment against big man Joel Embiid in the fourth quarter. The Knicks move within a victory of getting to the Eastern Conference semifinals for the second straight year, and they'll have a chance to do just that with a victory at home in tomorrow night's Game 5. To the diamond in Milwaukee, Aaron Judge's first-inning homer got the Yankees' offense running wild once again, with the Yanks defeating the Brewers 15-5. Anthony Rizzo went 4-for-4 and hit his 300th career dinger. Anthony Volpe added a three-run shot on his 23rd birthday. Judge went 3-for-4 with three RBI, including the 441-foot solo shot. New York also beat Milwaukee 15-3 on Saturday, marking the first time since 2007 that the Yanks scored at least 15 runs in back-to-back games. They grabbed a one-game lead in the AL East over the Orioles, who lost 7-6 to Oakland. Yanks will begin a four-game series at Baltimore tonight. First pitch there, 6:35. Clark Schmidt ready to take the hill for New York. In Metsland, Mark Vientos hit a two-run homer in the 11th inning. On his second day in the majors this season, give New York a 4-2 comeback victory over the St. Louis Cardinals that prevented a three-game sweep. Up next for the Mets is tonight's opener of a four-game set at home against the Chicago Cubs. First pitch scheduled for 7:10. Luis Severino gets a start there. That's your Sports Gnome. I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
Let's catch you up on some of the big stories of the morning. A bunch of pretty violent muggings in Central Park between Friday and Sunday. There were four in all, and almost a fifth one. They happened, two of them, 12 hours apart. Of course, tourists who love to go to Central Park, neighbors who love to walk their dogs there. Everybody kind of shocked by what's happening.
Yeah, that's strange because everywhere we go, there's loads of police.
I mean, it's horrible, but this is the state of New York at this point, that we can't just walk around.
Yeah, so here's two of them. A 42-year-old man taking photos just off Fifth Avenue when three men in masks approached him. They put a gun to his head. They punched him in the face, took off on mopeds with his two phones and a wallet. A 28-year-old woman had her wallet stolen at gunpoint. And then there was one guy who fought back, who wants you to know it's not a good idea to fight back, but it still wants you to hear his story. A 25-year-old, he's in Central Park over the weekend. He said he was there to watch the sunset and hang out on the Great Lawn. His name is Ashkor Chowdhury. He says these robbers tried to snatch his phone, and they failed because he said, I'm not going to give you my phone. So then they pulled out a gun, and he told them to shoot him because he wasn't going to hand over his gun, like daring them to shoot him.
Told him, you know, like, hey, you're not going to, I just told him, you're not going to shoot that gun. You don't have the balls to shoot the gun. You don't have the balls to shoot me. I looked at him in his eyes. It was all panic and fear. Listen, like, if you need help, there's always, you know, someone out there to help you.
Yeah, he tried to plead with him. So in that split second, he said he shifted the power dynamic from what he said looked like teenagers with guns to him. They wore masks. He works, this guy, Shakir, works with special needs children. And he says his teacher instincts kicked in. But he still says it was a stupid move. He should have handed over his phone and never in a million years dare somebody to shoot you because, well, they may take you up on the dare.
A lot of people have been calling it brave, but I personally see it as reckless and irresponsible. I should have just given him my phone.
Yeah. So eventually, actually, a biker rolled up, called the police. The armed muggers ran away. No arrests have been made. Another warning from Mr. Chowdhury, who tells you you should never do what he just did.
I hope that anyone I inspire, I only inspire the good parts about me, the parts that are like caring and kind, not the parts that are a brave idiot.
Yeah, I think better always to hand over your phone and your wallet. Wild weather over the weekend. Our weather was pretty nice, but if you went out Midwest, lots of tornadoes, a ton of tornadoes in Sulphur, Oklahoma. They were hit especially hard.
It's always been, no, it won't hit because it's in the valley, but it hit.
Yeah, damage assessments ongoing. National Weather Service says that tornado that hit the small town of Sulphur was at least an EF3. Another EF3 hit the town of Marietta. Widespread damage, some deaths as well.
It's the trees through the windows. We had just done new construction. It's all gone. So, everything. We all stick together. We all stick together, no matter what.
Oklahoma Emergency Management reports a man and a child died in the town of Holdenville, where just homes were destroyed. If you were on TikTok or any of the social media platforms over the weekend, no doubt you saw these funnel clouds. I mean, just wild, to just ripping up houses middle of the day. Some of them were overnight.
There was a tornado spotted on the ground. We notified the National Weather Service, and after everything cleared, we started responding to the area to do cleanup and search and rescue operations.
Yesterday, Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt getting a firsthand look at the trail of the destruction.
Definitely the most damage since I've been governor that I've seen. I've seen a lot of damage. I've been around the state for, it's my sixth year. But what I saw downtown Sulphur, it's unbelievable.
It wasn't just Oklahoma. Nebraska was hit. In Omaha, there was tornadoes. This woman says her and her kids huddled in the basement of their home in Minden, Iowa, as a tornado touched down there.
You could hear the debris hitting
our kitchen floor. We were under our kitchen, and the pressure changed. Your ears popped, and just an enormous amount of debris just was falling on the floor above us.
Yeah, she says amazingly her house is still standing today.
And set up command centers out west even before I think the storm had passed. Omaha Fire Department quickly went into search and rescue, went through every single property that was affected.
Yeah, so lots of people doing cleanup today in the Midwest. Let's bring it back home. We'll end with this story. For more than 30 years, people in the Bronx have turned to the Concourse Plaza multiplex cinemas to go see a movie. But they're closing now, which means there will only be one movie theater in the entire borough. Maybe that doesn't matter because people aren't going to movies like they used to. This theater opened up its doors in 1991. The first movie they showed was Home Alone and Thelma and Louise. But just ahead of the summer, the final film will flicker across this theater's iconic screens because they say the rent has gone too high and they can't afford to pay it anymore.
We got all these streaming networks, so that's probably what it is. People don't. Instead of spending more of your movie theaters, they probably just want to stay home.
This is happening across the board, where you sometimes have landlords and owners that are raising the price exorbitantly, where the tenants can no longer afford it, and they'll say, you know what, it's not worth it anymore.
So once this multiplex shuts down, moviegoers in the Bronx will have to make their way to Bay Plaza, which is in Co-op City. That's the last set of theaters in all of the Bronx. It's the Showcase Cinemas.
If the landlord have any type of love of courtesy in his heart, and he care for people, he care for children, he should leave it as is, work something out, and put himself in other people's shoes.
Yeah, well, the landlord wants to make money as well, and I'm sure his fees have gone up, and so that movie theater is out.